WTFRadio.me, underground and over the top radio.
Okay, everybody, I'm going to give Rick Moore, he's a great photographer, let's see what Rick's got to say today.
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, what's up, Rick? How you doing today, buddy?
Good. I was just coughing up some hominy.
Hominy. Nothing like home-cooked. Home cooking, you can't beat it.
That's right. Even if it came out of a can, it's still a little bit closer than fast food, so that's good.
Well, you know, we've known each other so far back, it's back when we used to have to remember each other's phone numbers. That's how far back we go.
That is.
We do.
I remember I tried to give you advice. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. It didn't work, did it?
I tried to give you advice early on.
Uh-huh.
Something I saw about the class, I was like, well, Jeff, maybe, and you said, you know what, you have not known me long enough to give me advice, so don't even think about it.
Right.
Well, and then about 10 years later, I started to give you some advice. I said, I think I've known you long enough, and you go, Rick, you have known me long enough to give me advice. I'm still not going to take it, though.
That's true. Because what works for me works for me, and what works for you works for you.
Exactly.
Right. You know, I can't help it. I was a fighter, kind of a hard ass, a little bit of a Bobby Knight type guy, you know, about high expectations, drive, drive, drive. And so, you know, that's just the way I was brought up, and that's the kind of family I came from. So that's me. Anyway, tell everybody a little bit. I met Rick Moore before he became a photographer for Playboy. As a matter of fact, right when I met him, he was the understudy of David Meese, if I can remember correctly. Is that right?
I was David Meese's first assistant.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so I was working with him, and it was just the coolest thing. I couldn't believe it. All of a sudden, I'd gone from, and I was having great success as an assistant in Dallas, but the thing was, you know, it was really cool, great photographers in Dallas, learning a lot, photographers that were very well educated at Brooks or at the Art Center in Pasadena. And with David, all of a sudden, we were off to trips around the United States, working on all kinds of pictorials. I was on an expense account at one point for Women of Wall Street. I had my own room at the Waldorf Astoria, and my brother got to come up and stay with me. I called him. I said, hey, and it was a big room, two beds, a salon, and the room cost more than I did.
Oh, I
which
bet.
Was kind of, it was back in the day when there was a, like a great budget.
Did you,
and I would.
Did you say the windows, windows on Wall Street?
I was staying at the it was Women of Wall Street.
Oh, okay, okay.
And it was just after that movie came out called Wall Street. And we shot, there was a skyscraper, and it was way, way up at one of the top floors. And it was the Wall Street character that Gordon Gekko, I believe his name was in the movie, was patterned after.
Oh, yeah.
And I was amazed. We shot on this desk, and it was like this solid piece of granite. And you're up on this top floor on a skyscraper, and I was trying to figure how in the world they got that granite up there, because it was huge.
You're talking about with Michael Douglas, right?
It was the character that Michael Douglas's character was patterned after.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about a real life. You're not talking about the movie. You're talking about a real life.
Yeah, we met some of the real life characters that supposedly, you know, I guess they were put together to kind of show what Gordon Gekko was, you know, to build that character of what he was like, of everything was about money and takeovers and all that. And at that time, you know, that was really popular on Wall Street. People were tearing up companies just for the sake of, you know, making money.
Yeah, but people were making money back then hand over fist.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
Yeah, Michael Milken.
Yeah, that was back in the early 90s. There may have been some sort of recession, but, I mean, the whole dot-com thing was in full swing, and people were getting out of college, and they were making $68,000 a year with a little bit of HTML programming, and there was a lot of opportunity back then.
Yeah, what happened? I thought we were going to talk about food.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about food, but tell everybody first a little bit. I tell you what, let's take a little break. We'll come right back, and we'll talk a little bit about what got you interested in photography in the first place.
Okay.
Okay. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me, and I'm sitting here talking to Rick Moore. We'll be right back. All right, I want to give a shout-out to Kaylin Donahue from Dallas, Texas, former Miss Hawaiian Tropics contestant. A winner, too.
Looks like you already dug my hole. Show me to the ladder and I'll crawl down. Knew it was coming, yeah, truth be told. When there's no breath left and silence is filled with sound, throw your dirt upon me. Your shoulder holds a crying crow. No parting words, no goodbye tears. Close the lid and plant the rose.
Okay, I'm back. I'm sitting here talking to Rick Moore from Playboy. Rick, tell everybody a little bit about what got you interested in photography and when did you get started?
Well, and just to clarify on the Playboy part, historically speaking, I have shot for Playboy for many years. I don't want to say that I'm representing Playboy in any form or fashion.
Right.
Like, historically, if I were traveling on a Playboy pictorial or a casting assignment back in the day before all the web stuff, before Playboy.com, we would get our publicity by being interviewed on radio, on television, and in that capacity, then I would be introduced as, you know, Rick Moore, Playboy, blah, blah, blah. But when I'm not doing that, then I'm just Rick Moore. And the reason I've held on to that position for so long is because I never got that crossed up. I never tried to use the name when I wasn't, you know, on an actual assignment, and that's where a lot of people fumble when they may, you know, get one shot into Playboy and all of a sudden they are a quote-unquote Playboy photographer for the rest of their life because they got one shot into Grapevine or one shot here or there instead of having a career that spans, you know,
yeah, but
15 years, 20 years.
I know you personally, and I know you're one of eight photographers that have been there for quite a while. When I mean quite a while, we're going back to the early 90s. And so, you know, if you don't mind saying, I mean, who would be the, it didn't have to be currently, but who's the core group of guys that you've worked with?
Well, everything's in transition right now, so I can't say. As of 3 years ago, it was the two centerfold photographers were Arnie Freytag and Stephen Weta, Yarmo, David Rams was, I don't think he is any longer, Kim Mizuno, Canada, Waldy Martins, and I just can't think of the other guy's name, in England, Byron Newman, so kind of that's the group that, New York, and Nishino, and so as Playboy is going through some changes right now, and some things are going from Playboy.com to Playboy Plus, there's a transition And so we're all just kind of, you know, evolving through that transition.
Well, you had an interesting assignment back in the 90s, I can remember, was the spring break shoot.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah. That, I mean, what a gig. Okay, everybody.
That was my...
We're going to go down to spring break in Padre, and there's going to be a few thousand women in bikinis, and we're going to be doing business down there. I mean, my God, what a gig.
Well, it was my very first assignment, and it was in 1990. It ran in 91. It was shot in 1990. And the editor that gave me that assignment, Jeff Cohen, that was my first breakthrough assignment, and he and I are both working with Shoot the Centerfold. I'm one of the photographers. It's made up of four photographers, all having long, long histories with Playboy, 20 to 30 years. Myself, Yarmo, Arnie Freytag, Byron Newman. And I always wanted to ask that editor, what was it that made you give me that break? Was it because I'm from that area? I grew up right next to South Padre Island. But I had also been on an assignment in Russia for some friends that have a ship salvage group, and I shot the first stadium rock concert in the Soviet Union. It was then the USSR in 1989 with
Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi, Skid Row, Ozzy Osbourne, Scorpions, and that was like an incredible, incredible experience happening at the same time as the Berlin Wall was coming down.
You got you have the actual hat that Bon Jovi wore, that comrade hat.
I have the hat that is just like it. I didn't have his hat, but I have the hat that is just like it from a Soviet, army guy. You know, it's the same hat. I still have that hat.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it many times.
Yeah. So, anyway. During that trip, I had spoken with Jeff, and I said, look, I'm going to be in Moscow. You know, is there anything you need? And he said, as a matter of fact, there's a hush-hush project, but it's the first Women of Russia pictorial. As the USSR was opening up, Jeff had gained access, was working with a Russian photographer, and it was a really big deal at that time. It doesn't seem like so much now, but in the time, it was still the Cold War, and it was a big deal.
Right.
And so I was able to smuggle back about 30 rolls of film that were, it was all shot by this Russian photographer. And when I got to England, I had it shipped to Jeff at the Playboy office. And so I always thought, and I like telling that story, it sounds like a great story.
I always thought that's what got me
my first assignment.
A little photography and, espionage.
Exactly.
Exactly. And, it's got a little intrigue.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot more to that story, how it all went and how it all, you know, came together. But anyway, I asked Jeff this last summer. We were both working on Shoot the Centerfold. And I said, so, Jeff, what was it? You know, was it the film from Russia? Was it Growing Up by South Padre? And he said, you were eager. And I thought, oh, that's kind of funny. Because whenever something would come up, I'd be like, hey, do you need this? What about this? I can shoot that.
Yeah, but you're also bilingual, and down in South Texas, there's a lot of territory that you need to be bilingual.
Well, and I'm not perfectly bilingual, that's a whole other story. I did the nationwide search for Latin ladies in 2000, and I was hired for that because I have, you know, an ability at Spanish. I'm not completely fluent, but I did a radio interview in Miami with this well-known Colombian guy that had this show, and they were really asking me to do this. I was like, okay, great. And I did it in Spanish, and it went better than I could have imagined. And then they thought, well, that went well. We want to have you on our television show. And I didn't have time for that anymore, but the editor said, look, okay, maybe we need some more publicity. Why don't you go ahead and do it? So I agreed to do it. His name was Julio Crispo Sanchez. And it was I thought it was some show in Miami going to Columbia. I get there, and it was like Nightline, live in 27 Spanish-speaking countries.
Oh, my God. That's a big
deal.
I got
a little nervous.
Oh, that's a big deal. So it was a lot bigger than you thought it was going to be.
I, Yeah, no, I got a little bit nervous, and luckily there was this really great playmate that was originally from Colombia, was perfectly bilingual. I'll think of her name in a minute, and if it had not been for her, I would have been in so much trouble because they had on-air callers, and it was all in Spanish. The on-air caller starts up with his complaint about Playboy, and it goes on for like 3 minutes. Wow. And after the first 10 seconds, I was already thinking about what I was going to have for dinner. It was like it right over my head.
Oh, really?
And so at the end, Julio looks at me after the question's over, Ricardo, ¿qué piensas de esa pregunta? And I was like deer in the headlights. I had no idea what the question even was. And the playmate jumped in, and in perfect Spanish, she explained, well, Rick is a Playboy photographer, extremely professional. As I found out, you know, in working with Playboy photographers, there's a level of professional, and it was all great.
Oh,
and
good.
She and I ended up working together on some other stuff like that because she was, yeah, she covered me.
You know, a lot of people may not realize this. You're down in South Texas right now, as a matter of fact, and in that particular area on the border, I went down there to Rio Grande City with George Guerrero. I know you know him. And I got down there, and I was eating at a Whataburger, and one of the oil field workers, he goes, you know, you're the first white Anglo guy I've seen in 2 weeks down here. I said, you're kidding. And after we ate there, we went to a 7-Eleven, and we walked in, and everybody's speaking Spanish. So I look over George, and I ask him a question in English. Everybody in the 7-Eleven stopped, and they all started speaking English. And I thought to myself, wow, nobody was speaking English till I said something. Then all of them automatically started speaking English. I thought that was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, well, for me in high school down here, I went from being in Oklahoma with 48 people in my 8th grade class to 750 in my 9th grade class, and mostly Hispanic. But I was, my family's from Oklahoma, but I was born in Venezuela. We had gone to Mexico a lot, so it wasn't complete cultural change for me, but it was a bit of a surprise and just how everything worked. And in between classes, everything would go into Spanish. And so really, my Spanish should be perfect for the background that I've had. I was just lazy. And that's all. I'm just hoping someday to really pick up the grammar book and, you know, really make an effort.
Okay, well, let's take another little break here. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me. I'm sitting here talking to Rick Moore. I want to give a shout-out to Kaylin Ray Donahue. And Rick, she told me to tell you, howdy. What's up, girl? Hope you're enjoying WTFRadio.me. This is Dark Skies by Shutdown Town from Sherman, Texas. And I now we'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Touching on something that we talked about earlier, Rick, you graduated from Oklahoma University in Oklahoma with a degree in communications, and I know you were trying to teach me how to communicate with people. And so how did you go from getting a degree in communications at Oklahoma University and then switch over to photography?
Well, I started with a camera when I was 17. I was taking care of my grandfather. He was ill. He had cancer. He passed away, and my father was just going through some stuff and handed me his camera. Both my father and my grandfather were amateur photographers with 35-millimeter SLRs. And so I just started playing with it, and I was fascinated by it. And I just kept learning and asking questions and all this stuff. And my father thought it was really kind of cool and nice that I was interested in it. And as I was going to college, I couldn't decide what to do for the longest time. He was pushing me to be a business major. It just wasn't flying. Got into communication, and it was speech communication, intercultural, interpersonal, those kind of things, and I took to it. Then I finished, and I started working on my master's. Then the chair of the department called me into his office. I had him for a class. I thought I was in trouble, and he asked me to teach a class, which was the intro to communication course. And I have a fear of public speaking. I have some stage fright.
Really?
Something that was very challenging for me.
Well, not in the club, you don't. I've been out with you in a bar. You do not have that in the club. But I guess in a classroom, it's a lot different.
Well, what it is, like, I'm fine one-on-one. I'm fine in a small group. It's when I would walk in front of a group and I would be on my own, you know, whether it was a stage or a podium or something, that kind of thing, in front of a group of people. And that's another story. Like, I pretty well conquered it through that. And then later on, when I was a professional photographer, I was shooting for, you know, the Bunny and for other things, I was asked to speak a few times, and I didn't do a great job. And I thought I was forever cured from being a communication major. And this is what I was going to tell you. Now, from my perspective, I probably wouldn't be telling you that, because sometimes I find my communication isn't that great. So just because you have a degree in it doesn't mean, you know, so I probably shouldn't have even been giving you that advice to begin with.
Maybe you should just talk faster or talk more, and then you can just work through it and work around it.
Yeah. Well, to work around it later on, I took acting classes, and that was awesome. It was challenging. That went really, really well. Back to how I got into photography. I was studying this stuff, and the whole time, in my spare time, I was reading up on photography. I went to some, you know, different exhibits and shows, and I would still travel, and wherever I was, I'd try and go to a museum or something and look at photographers of the time and really followed a few really great photographers. And so it started getting into my blood. And my father saw this, and he tried to block it, thinking, oh, no, this is not good. Going into photography as a profession, not a good idea.
Like an artist.
So, yeah. So when I finished my master's, I went to Dallas. I was thinking I was headed to Los Angeles, and there was a great community in Dallas of assistants and photographers. They were all members of ASMP, that's Great Society of Media Photographers, and they were very open and welcoming, and I was like, oh, this is incredible. I'd never seen a studio like I saw in Dallas. It was just, you know, a great experience, and that's how I started assisting in Dallas, and I never looked back on communication. I just thought, if I didn't leave at that moment, it would, you know, I'd either be in a job or I'd be teaching, and that would be the end of my photography aspirations.
Well, you know, in Dallas, there was a core group of photographers that came up through the 80s and the 90s, the Badger Brothers and Pete.
Yeah.
Pete, I know you know him. He did some work for me at one time. And so, you know, but everybody knew each other. It was a real tight-knit community also.
great community and very sharing, very, like, not competitive, like, no, don't come into my studio. I don't want you to see my lighting. I mean, as an assistant, it was the best possible scenario I could have been in. And everyone, you know, that I worked with was, I really learned a lot, you know, whoever they were.
Well, tell everybody what the greatest book that you ever read was considering lighting, because I still remember you telling me about it.
Uh-oh. I don't know if I'm remembering.
The Masters, book on lighting. The Masters of Light.
The Masters of Lighting?
No, The Master of Light. I thought that was the name of it.
The Master of Light?
No, The Masters of Light.
Yeah, I'm not recalling.
Well, yeah, that's a book you told me to get because I was fooling around photography because of my business. I was taking a lot of photos, and you started encouraging me a little bit to get more after it. And so, you know, I did get after it.
It may have been something I just ran across at the time. But basically, like with Shoot the Centerfold, I just taught my first segment of Shoot the Centerfold in Miami in late January. Arnie Freitag was also teaching. And, you know, like photographers like Arnie or myself don't really open up our studios to just teach like that very often. It's kind of a rare thing. But what I found fascinating was listening to Arnie. And he was frustrated because as much as he was teaching technique, people were not seeing the lighting. And he was like, if they don't see the light, how can I teach them? And I didn't realize he had such a strong background in art and art history. And so he showed slides of his favorite artist is Renoir. He showed slides, and then he described the flow of light in the painting. And then he'd put on a slide of one of his centerfolds and then describe the flow of the light, which was exactly the same. And it was really amazing to me and kind of an epiphany of like, wow, that was really cool. And before I was a photographer, my mom took us to San Miguel de Allende down in Mexico, where she had to bring up her credits for teaching. She was teaching elementary school, and I wasn't that big into art by any means, but I had some influence from that period. I'll talk about that another time, but there's a whole kind of funny story there. Bottom line is, any access you have to anything in art that has lighting involved in it, just start looking at the lighting and the shadows and how they affect the subject, because that's the only way that it's described is through the light and the shadows.
Well, the two things that I was an artist growing up, and I took art classes. I competed in art contest up until about the ninth grade. And
see, you're a real artist. You can draw. I can't draw at all.
Well, see, the thing is like when the reason that I had a knack for photography, not professionally, but a knack for it, is because whenever I would take a photograph, I would consider three things: perspective, balance, and lighting. And so when I would take a photograph, I would take a photograph thinking of somebody like Norman Rockwell. In other words, the balance and the life that he had in the photograph itself. And so, you know, I guess, you know, if anybody wants to know about how to become a good photographer, just think about an oil painting. Think about an artist. Think about something you've seen before, and then apply that to your shot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's take another little break here. This is Jeff Overturf for WTFRadio.me, and I'm sitting here with Rick Moore from Play. Okay, this song goes out to Kaylin Ray Donahue, former Miss Hawaiian Tropics champion. What's up, girl? How me and Rick doing?
You are tired and you want to be free. My love is growing stronger as you become a habit to me. I've been loving you too long. I don't want to stop now. Now listen, baby. With you, my life has been so wonderful. I don't want to stop now. stop now.
Okay, I'm back. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me. I'm sitting here with the photographer, Rick Moore. Rick, you know, one of the things that I can remember hanging around with you in the past is, like, when you told people, you know, what you did for a living and everything else, because you shot nudity, everybody would be kind of comical. And try to explain to everybody what the difference is instead of it just being a sexual thing or, you know, some sort of comical thing that people gag about, tell everybody how you had to make that adjustment and everything.
Well, and I'm glad you asked. It's a long kind of history that kind of molded me in that way. And it was kind of an oil baron's ball, and it was at a ranch close to Houston. And at the after party, there's a very nice woman. She was an anesthesiologist, and she really enjoyed asking very direct, pointed questions of the people at the table. She got to me, and she said, "So, do you have erections when you're shooting?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, that's kind of an uncouth thing to even say." I said, "No, I don't."
Well, she related to me.
Well, no. She goes, "Well, are you, like, normal? You're healthy?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm very healthy, thank you." And she said, "Well, why don't you?" And I said, I've tried to make different analogies, but it hasn't quite captured it. So I said, and there was a group of people there, and I said, "I think, you know, I'm sorry to say this. I don't mean to offend anyone. But in the United States, we have a very simplistic view of sex and nudity and love. There aren't really distinctions. So a lot of people only see someone nude in the act of it's some kind of a sexual thing or it's a love thing, but it's not, there isn't just nudity.
Right.
And it's always related to sex, and sex is often related to love. And they don't see those things as being separate and independent. And so for me, it started with being in Tamago de Yende, and I was like 12. I walked into my mom's fine art painting class, and this is in Mexico in the 70s, so it's not the same kind of heaviness that it would be now, but I walked in, and there were live nude models. And my mom, I didn't realize the quandary she was in at the moment, because my mother is religious and a fine artist and believes in education, and so she didn't know what to do. So I just stood there, and I grabbed a paintbrush. I don't really paint, and I started kind of dabbling on the corner of her canvas and watching. And then the models got up and stretched and took a break, and I just remember it vividly. And I was just like, wow, that is impressive. And I came back the next day, and my mom kind of after that, she didn't chew me out, but she just had a conversation with me and said, "Look, you need to stick to your classes. I'll stick to my classes. Later on, if you want to take this class, you can take this class. But right now, you know, you're a bit too young for this." Okay. When I started assisting on Playboy and then shooting for Playboy, my mom's reaction was like, "I knew it. I knew something was going to happen from that. I was afraid to run you out of the class that you would have a weird feeling about nudity. And at the same time, if I let you stay, I didn't know what would happen." And this is what happened. So she blames herself.
Oh, it's my fault. I ruined my child. Okay, what about any other influence that you might have had in that regard when it came to you know, philosophy about nudity, photography, and that exposure and everything besides your mom's class?
Well, so for me to really make these into distinctions, it happened on a trip to France where I have a best friend he grew up in Paris, but he lived in Texas for a period of time. My brother dated a sister. He and I were great friends. And when he moved back, we stayed in touch. So they would come over here and visit. We would go over there and visit. So I was on my first trip, and I was in the south of France at a beach at Biarritz called, it was Le Plage du Cavalier, which means Cowboy's Beach. And I thought, okay, this is perfect beach for me. And all of a sudden, I see topless girls everywhere. Very, very few girls wear a top in France. They don't wear a bikini. They wear a monokini. And I was stunned.
You mean?
There's a different section of the beach where men and women wear nothing. So it goes from bottoms only to nothing. And there's maybe 10 girls running around with the top on. That was at this time when I was there. I'm not positive lately, but I imagine it's the same.
You mean in public, right?
In public, at the public beach, at the Plage du Cavalier, and I was stunned.
You got to pay. You got to pay $20 cover charge to see that here in Dallas.
Well, and I saw this beautiful girl, and I wanted to talk to her. I, you know, had all the shyness of a 20-year-old, and my French was not that great, and I was, you know, really trying to strike up a conversation with her and to look at her in the eyes. And she is a beautiful girl on the beach in public in a monokini. And so as I went through this kind of stuff and these experiences, I kind of started realizing, and in conversations with girls, and there were friends of my friend Pierre that I would speak with about this whole thing. And also an American girl was visiting, and she took her top off at the beach with our group of friends. And I was very careful to not look at her or say anything about it because she was having a hard time. She was trying to fit in with everyone in the group. She didn't want to be teased or chastised. I just kept my mouth shut. It was during this that I realized there is this complete distinction between nudity, sexuality, love. So I could talk to this girl that was topless on the beach, and there was absolutely nothing happening there other than talking to a girl. And that's all that was happening. So on the beach in France, people aren't walking around becoming physically stimulated. It's just normal.
So another,
when I started...
You didn't get dry throat or anything like that or have a hard time talking or...
Well, in the beginning, absolutely. I was, I was trying to... It would have been awkward anyway. I was trying to speak French to a beautiful French girl, but... Her being topless, wow. I mean, I think she's just laughing at me the entire time. I think she enjoyed it and got a kick out of it. I got absolutely nowhere.
Well, see, that's where education plays in. See, that college degree in communication, that background with multi-languages. See, that never underestimate the power of education.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've never used my degree as far as getting a job or needing to use that diploma, but the education that I went through, the education itself, has always been, you know, really powerful for me because people don't, you know, they don't even think about that. But I've got many other stories on that.
Well, you're very articulate, and you have the ability to tie in a life experience that segues into your adult life and how you can interact with that new experience. In other words, you can like pinpoint, whereas most people can't, you know, that I don't know why, but you have a really good gift or ability to do that, to be able to talk about, you know, it was my mother's class was the first time. And then all of a sudden, you know, and then you segue into the other parts. That's really unique. And I wish more people could do that I had on my radio show.
Well, thanks. It was interesting because I actually, during this whole period, and in Brownsville, of all places, it was a very international place. It had access to Mexico. I was in Mexico on my motorcycle all the time, starting at 15. And, I mean, it's dangerous now, but at that time it was just fantastic. But I had a best friend from France, and I had a girlfriend from England. And before this phone call, when you were trying to call, give me a call and touch base, I was on the phone with my former girlfriend from England, and we were catching up. We were just talking about stuff, and she was telling me that she thinks that I only used a part of my potential in being a photographer because she said you have the ability to relate to people, and you really could use that in other ways. And she was just kind of encouraging me to do that a little bit. And it was interesting because I told her, hey, you know, a friend of mine is going to interview me for his radio program. And here we are. And you just happened to touch on that, and you and I did not even talk about it. But I had a whole conversation about that, you know, earlier today. And it is interesting. I remember at OU, I went to see, you know, all these different people who would be speaking. This one guy was a high-end, very successful stockbroker. And he was speaking at the business school. And so I went over. I was no longer a business major, but I went. I wanted to hear what he had to say. And what he said was, I hate to tell you all this because I know you're all business majors because he was at the business school. He goes, I wasn't a business major. I was a liberal arts major. I was actually a letters major, which was studying all of the great liberal arts areas of history, of English, of languages, of mathematics, of, so, you know, just a whole bit of everything. And he said, after I graduated, I was hired as a stockbroker, not because I knew anything about it, but because I had the ability to speak to people, and yet I had the ability to learn. So that's what college taught me. It didn't give me specific business skills. Those can be taught in whatever job you're going to be in. And I think it's, you know, that just goes to say, education is great just for the pure part of education, of being educated.
Well, you know, I agree. You know, your ability to evolve and to adapt. And, you know, those two of the main ingredients for the survival of the human species and us progressing as far as we have in such a short period of time. So, you know, I don't know if they actually teach that in college like they should, like, you know, like how things are connected. There's one other person that I knew as a photographer. He was also an engineer, and this was in California. And he had the incredible capacity, somewhat like you, to put the dots together between, well, this happened and this is what's happening, and then be able to connect everything and then bring it into something that he could explain very well.
Well, and I've had a little bit of time to think about it, and I was hit like on radio shows or television shows, but more radio program where somebody would ask me a really pointed question that was very kind of abrupt, like, you know, what the anesthesiologist asked me. And I would try and think about those distinctions. And so when I would be shooting something with nudity in a photograph, I'm thinking about the photograph. I'm thinking about the lighting. At that time, I was thinking about the pressure that I was under from an editor for the photograph that I was supposed to produce, and I had to produce that. The last thing on my mind was something sexual. You know, it's like, that's not what I was concerned about. I mean, these days, you have somebody buying a DSLR that has no idea of the distinctions. They just want to meet chicks. Well, it's not. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just that's a completely different thing than what I experienced.
Well, you've had your share of running into beautiful women, because we mutually, we know a few of them. And one of them is Krista Frazier out of Houston, Texas. She is like hot.
She's an incredible woman. I remember, well, you know, like that Helen of Troy and what is that saying? The beauty that can launch, you know, 1,000 ships.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she is kind of captivating like that, isn't she?
Oh, she is. Well, let's take a little break here. We'll come back and touch on that just a little bit. I'll be right back. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me with Rick Moore. Okay, here's a song by Gary Moore out of Sherman, Texas, another local boy.
The nightclubs, I know I got it made. I'm going down Atlanta, GA. I'm going down, down, down in Atlanta, GA. Yeah. I see you back, Alley Sally, out on Petrie Street, hanging from the ball with every. To have about a quarter to nine. Heaven to
This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me, and I'm sitting here talking to Rick Moore. You know, we were talking before we left there a little bit about Krista Frazier. Now, did you meet her because of her involvement in the Hawaiian Tropics contest? Is that correct?
It was really a great moment because I was sent from Playboy to Cancun for Hawaiian Tropic. I guess it was the Mexico finals. And I was just kind of finding my way. I was sent there as a Playboy photographer and a representative. And so I was seeing girls from Hawaiian Tropic. And it was really good, but I was trying to be really careful and, you know, very politically correct and everything. And everything was going well. And they had the big celebration where they announced the winners, and I was introduced as a celebrity photographer, and they had taken care of my seating, and I was sitting next to this, I really didn't know who I was going to be sitting next to. I was sat next to this girl, and it was kind of a big deal, and her name was Krista Frazier, and this guy, he was another judge, and, you know, kind of a very wealthy guy that was adamant about sitting next to her. And I think he probably would have handed me $300 easily to have taken my seat. He was like, well, I was supposed to sit next to Krista. And, you know, and I was just kind of looking at him like, you know, things are starting, people are, you know, I literally could have looked over and said, give me $300. I'm sure he would have done it. But I was so happy to be sitting next to her. It was like, okay, things are really going really well. And she just kind of, like, she was the perfect person to be sitting next to because she was Miss Hawaiian Tropic she had won everything. She was the overall winner, and
world champion.
Just, you know, that kind of beauty.
And she was, like, world champion, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. Well, she, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, she was just great. She was great, and I ran into her after that in Dallas a few times, and, you know, then I ran into her again. I handled myself well that first time, and then I was sent to the Hawaiian Tropic Nationals in Hawaii at North Shore at Turtle Bay. It was the hotel that is used in the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Right.
And it was really funny because I had a girlfriend at that time. You and I were talking about girlfriends, and I think we're going to get into this
right.
a little bit later. But on my first assignment, you know, my girlfriend at that time was not super happy that I was going without her to Hawaii on
right.
a Playboy assignment to be a representative, a scout, and at times a judge for Hawaiian Tropic. And all those things, you know, that I... Like when I was a lifeguard in Brownsville when I was in high school and coming out of high school, and I used Hawaiian Tropic, and I heard that Ron Rice was the inventor and all that, and, you know, I kind of looked forward to meeting him, but kind of like Hef, I figured there would be kind of an entourage around him, and you don't just walk up to them and just start talking. So I was very respectful of Ron Rice, and the people around him that were handling the pageant weren't sure what to make of me at first. Because, you know, I think when people hear somebody associated with Playboy, you know, they're not sure. They didn't know about the distinctions.
Right. No, and you explained that very well earlier. I understand 100% what you're saying.
And so as they came to know me, especially the women that worked at Hawaiian Tropic at the event loved me because I always handled myself very well. I never was, you know, any problem, out of control. And since I ran a crew and I had to take care of the models and the crew, when a girl had a problem, I would bring it to the attention of like, hey, this girl may need some medical attention. She's got something in her eye. It's swelling or just things like that. And they were like, wow, you know, he's not only nice, he's helpful. And I'd try and do that whenever I could. But I actually ended up becoming friends with Ron Rice, which was so awesome because, you know, I have my picture of me being a lifeguard with my lifeguard shorts and I have my Hawaiian Tropic and I've stayed at Ron's guest house in Florida. We're on each other's cell phones. That was an awesome part about getting those assignments, meeting people like that, getting to know people like that, And so Krista, yeah, you know, she would be at many of the functions. We'd see each other. And it's always awesome to have made a friend of a very beautiful woman.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay, let's take another little break here. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the experiences that you might have had. They always say that 80% of our relationships are started on the job. Well, most people don't have a job like you. And so that's going to be a very interesting topic. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me and Rick Moore. Okay, we got another local boy here. This is Kristen Books. What's it going to be on WTFRadio.me with Rick Moore? What's up, Kaylin Ray Donahue? Girlfriend. Jerry Green, how you doing? Kim O'Neill, how you doing? What's up?
You need more than a falling clover. You need more than your fortune ran. You need more than a crystal ball. Those things won't help you at all. What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? You need more than all the money. You need more than all the gold. What if a man gains the whole world? And he ends up losing his whole soul. What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? You need more than old Saint Nick. You need more than your old friend Felix and his big old bag of tricks. What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? What's it gonna be? Before it takes its toll. What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? What's it gonna be? What's it gonna be, my friend? One last time now.
Okay, we're back. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me. I'm sitting here talking to Rick Moore. Rick, we touched on something before we left. We were talking a little bit about what it's like to, like, manage your relationships, because you've met quite a few women on the job that I'm aware of. And, you know, I've known a couple of them, and you've talked about quite a few of them. And so how do you manage all that, you know, the trust or mistrust, or, you know, or them knowing that, well, you met me here, then, you know, how does that all work out?
Well, that's an interesting question, of course. And we have had many a conversation about that. And for me, first of all, for the etiquette of a photographer, I never, ever infer anything to a woman on set. It's a vulnerable situation. I don't want to go out with a girl who was leveraged by what I was doing. I want to go out with a girl who thinks I'm funny, interesting, maybe attractive, something like that. So the women that I have dated, and so the girl that I'm talking about, when I first went to Wine Tropic, we met on a calendar shoot, just purely a calendar shoot. And I had a show at the time on HDNet called Behind the Shutter. And she was the most difficult model to get a model release from for being on that show. And she was the make or break on it, because she was really a character, very witty and very attractive. She and I ended up dating after that. What happened was, in one of the shoots, there was a huge longhorn bull, and she was next to the bull, and then the bull was next to a stream. The makeup artist was freaking out and wanted the model on the other side of the bull because she was afraid the model was going to get pushed into the stream. And in fact, it was the worst idea, because the bull was then next to the stream, and he didn't want to be next to the stream, so he just gingerly stepped a little bit over and stepped on her foot. And I felt, it wasn't my idea to use the bowl to be shooting extra stream. It was the person producing the calendar.
Oh, I got you.
And I felt really badly about it. And so I offered to buy her groceries. And I went shopping for her, and that's how we started dating.
Did it break her foot?
It hurt her foot badly. It didn't break it, but it hurt it badly. And she was in a flexible cast.
Right.
Or, you know, at least a month after that, if not 6 weeks. And so I literally came down from Dallas to San Antonio and bought her groceries for probably, you know, that entire period.
How noble of you. The damsel in distress. Rick comes flying down to the hero.
I seem to have a weakness for that particular thing. It's not so much Playboy or something like that as it is
chivalry.
A damsel in distress.
Yeah.
And so... Anyway, yeah, she wasn't too happy about my first trip to Hawaiian Tropic. We had broken up after that, and I was really devastated by it. And I remember going to a Hawaiian Tropic huge event, and I was just moping over her, and I was being consoled by, like, you know, just this whole bevy of gorgeous Hawaiian Tropic models. It was probably a nice way to be consoled, but had I been in a great mood, it would have gone much better. So the thing is, for me, getting back to those distinctions, a girl that I'm dating, that's an interpersonal relationship, and I'm heavily invested in that. A girl that I'm shooting is a girl that I'm shooting. That is, you know, a completely different distinction, and it doesn't, for me, necessarily overlap. I mean, I want to talk to a model when I'm shooting her. I want her to be comfortable, but it doesn't really go beyond that. I think just for myself, I probably just need to quit looking for damsels in distress would be probably my answer.
Well, what about, so you have a relationship with a girl, you met her on the set or somewhere associated with a shoot, and then you're going on another shoot, shooting your favorite topic, which is usually gorgeous women. How does that play out? I mean, do you have to walk on eggshells, or how did you manage that? Because most men are never in your situation. I mean, not even remotely.
You know what?
I mean, like,
yeah, you know what?
This is like nuclear fuel for your average female, you know? I mean, for them to be able to deal with it.
I have many different stories for that. But the latest story, I'm just going to throw that out first, is that I'm unfortunately single again. I had a fantastic girlfriend But she asked me out 2 months after I photographed her in Malibu.
Right.
And I really didn't. It took me two weeks to figure out that she wanted to go out with me. I was not. It just wasn't even in the forefront of my mind. And
I know you, and that's a fact. You've been that way with a lot of women.
Yeah, I did not even get it.
I can remember being at a bar with you. I said, you know, Rick, that girl likes you. No, what makes you think that? Because I'm. Because I'm alive.
I'm like, no, she doesn't.
Yeah, yes, she does. Because I saw her look at you. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, so what's funny about my last relationship is she had no problem with me shooting Playboy. What she had a problem with was me having girls that are friends and having just friendship with them and talking with them or going to get lunch or something like that. A girl that I've never gone out with, no sexual anything, just friends. She had a huge problem with that.
Right.
I think it's because I'm more likely to proceed off of an interpersonal relationship, but I have no inclination of that.
Right.
You know, I mean, she became very jealous of that, which is kind of funny and ironic. Now, when I was an assistant back in the day, I had this girlfriend that was a friend of a girl I knew from Oklahoma, and she was cute, and I thought, oh, this is great, and I was on one of these road trips with David. I was gone. I could be gone for a month, sometimes 6 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. I came back from the trip expecting that I had a girlfriend. And I called her, and I was like, well, hey, you know, I'm back. Let's go do, you know, something. Let's go out. She's like, I have a new boyfriend. And I was like, what? What do you mean you have a new boyfriend? I just didn't stand it in my mind that you would be around beautiful women, and that some of them may be more beautiful than I am, and I don't care to even think about it, so I just started dating someone else.
All right, let's take another little break here. This is Jeff Overturf. I'm sitting here talking to Rick Mora. We'll be right back in just a second.
mothers. I really got my doubts. I've seen you down at the rainbow, hanging out with Red.
Okay, I'm back. I'm sitting here with Rick Moore. Rick, this has been one of the most interesting shows I've ever done. I know ever since I've been in radio, I've been wanting to get you on here for at least over a year. I'm glad you finally did it, and I really appreciate that. But if somebody really wanted to go see some of your work, or would you like to tell everybody about what you've just done or what you have on the coming up in your work, how would you give everybody that information?
I guess there are three different places to go. For girls interested in Playboy stuff, I'm in Model Mayhem. You can just Google me. And my name is Rick. It's short for Ricardo, R-I-C-M-O-O-R-E. So if you just Google that, you'll find my Model Mayhem, and I have some Playboy stuff on there. I did the last special editions casting in Houston for Playboy in October, shot for them in October, November. And I've been doing kind of some advertising, which has been very interesting. And kind of on the bilingual side, I photographed a soccer star in Monterrey, Mexico for Coors Light. And that was an adventure, flying into Monterrey and shooting that. That was pretty cool. I did an ad for Bacardi for their bar at Cowboys Stadium. And I was able to use people from my acting class, people from improv, as talent in the shot, which is awesome. I knew I could count on them when I wanted them to be really animated. And I'm doing Shoot the Centerfold. So if photographers are interested in learning Playboy style of lighting, they can go to shootthecenterfold.com. For people interested in advertising, I'm at rickmoore.com, R-I-C-M-O-O-R-E.com. So it just kind of depends. I've always had a variety in what I do, and I've enjoyed that. So I shoot a lot of different things. I have fun with that. I'm starting to do a little bit more fine art now. Well, you know what I'm actually doing is I'm going through my files from back in the day, and it turns out that's now considered fine art.
Oh, you mean some of the stuff that didn't make it to the magazine, you have access and
nothing to do with women. It was before I started shooting heavy into, model photography. I was a commercial assistant, and before that, just my own aspirations in photography were really heavily design-oriented and color-oriented, and then I had a completely different personality in black and white in my style of shooting, which is really a little bit more kind of Old Life magazine, something like that. And so some of the stuff that I shot early on, Yarmo now considers to be some of my best photographs for that fine art genre. And we're talking about exhibiting in Miami at Art Basel. And I just saw a National Geographic photographer who was wonderful speaking at, it was a, I also spoke, it was a high school student membership of teachers teaching photographers, students taking photography. It was really a cool thing. I had no idea it was so good. My assistant has worked on it for years and tried to get me involved. The keynote speaker, his name was Sam Abel. I just did a little blip in this fun class, but he was the keynote speaker. And incredible, really, really great, really great person to speak with as well. And he said, what if you shot one of your best shots before you were really trained as a photographer? And he shot a photograph that he shot at 15 of his father at a train station in, it was in the Midwest, and the steam and the whistle and all that stuff, it's incredible. And I went up to meet him afterwards. I bought one of his books, and I had him sign it, and I told him who I was, and I showed him this photograph that I shot of my Uncle Warren before I had any training. And he looked at it, and he's like, yeah, that's the kind of photograph. And it's just interesting how sometimes things kind of come together before you know, you're even realizing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. When I do my cover photos on Facebook, because of my art background, you know, I have a pretty good idea about arrangement, depth, and, you know, the symmetry of the photograph and everything else. And so I use that now. And I'm glad that Facebook came out with that cover photo, because there's just so much more we can do than just a picture of our own mug. And I'm sure you're probably using that also.
Well, I have not stepped up to Facebook. You are much more of an aficionado of social networking. You know, I mean, when we first started talking about this, you just had opening basic questions. Now you are, you know, completely educated in videography and editing and website and radio, all these things, you know, that I don't even touch upon.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that, like, in your industry, photography was incredibly impacted by Adobe Photoshop. In other words, the way that the cameras have evolved, they do a lot of the adjustments for you, and then what those don't cover, then you can take it into Photoshop and you can enhance it. If you're a master at Photoshop, your photographs are going to look great. And so I don't know how that's affected your industry, but I know we can take that up on our next show we're going to do. And
okay.
Just for everybody's information, because Rick is such a good talker, he's so tuned in to the social, the current events, what's happening in the world, and he has that kind of worldly background and everything else. I'm going to be having Rick on the show on a continual basis, and we're going to be doing a 10-minute spot on every show after this show. So everybody keep tuned in. And what else would you like to cover possibly? I know we were talking a little bit about the organic food industry.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be touching on that also coming up in the next show.
And it's not, for me, it's not just organic foods. It's that in the United States, a company can start out with a decent product and then start substituting inferior things, chemical ingredients, just so they make a penny more profit per item. And they don't know what the end result of is going to be on your health.
That's that's Monsanto. Monsanto, the ex-CEO Monsanto, is the head of the EPA now. So we are definitely going to dig into that.
Well, and right here in South Texas where I'm at now, when I moved down here originally when I was 13, I was a chubby, short kid. And Brownsville helped turn me around. It was so active. There were so many things going on. There were no chain restaurants here then. Maybe a couple, just your popular, hamburger places, just a couple of those. Now there's everything. And now it's the reverse. I'm slim, and I come down here, and there's a huge weight problem here. And it's horrible to see.
Yeah, but you're sitting right in the middle of one of the largest food belts in the whole nation. I mean, the Rio Grande River Valley going through McAllen, Brownsville, Harlingen. I mean, they've got some incredible growth, fruits, vegetables, just like in California.
Yeah. Yeah, but the problem is, like in Mexico, I was talking about this with a friend of mine who was born in Mexico last night as we were eating tacos at a taqueria. And I said, you know what? Down in Mexico, fruits are, they're wonderful fruits. They're celebrated, and people really, I mean, fruit is huge. And so there isn't a huge commercial push like there is here on getting this fast food or that fast food, going to this restaurant, getting this McThing or that Wada thing. You know, it's like you eat a lot of fruit,
right?
And
exactly.
Here you have no punchy advertising. Go have a vegetable taco. Go have a X salad. Go eat this fruit. It's pounded into you to go get this burger or that burger that is really high in fat. You don't know what it ate, and what it ate could have been completely foreign to its own body physiology, what it was ever meant to eat, growth hormones, all these things, preservatives. And you know, other countries don't allow this. It's not, it's literally against the law.
Yeah,
in the United States, it's kind of like, hey, if a company can make a buck off of selling it to the public and them eating it, more power to them.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but the yield per acre in industrialized farming in the United States, and as far as monetary value goes, is an average of $21 per acre. On a 5 to 15 acre or 3 acre plot for your organic farm in the United States, doing it totally organically with no pesticides or anything else, it's $15,000 an acre. And so there's,
I think we're in the wrong business.
Oh, I know. But we'll touch more on that on the next show. Well, I sure have appreciated having you on the show, Rick.
Thanks for having me on here, Jeff. I appreciate your persistence. I'm sorry it took so long.
No, that's okay. There was, you know, it wasn't meant to be back then, but now it is. And we are definitely going to be lunging into other topics, you know, associated with, like we just touched on today with the food thing. And other things that are about maybe some of the politics involved in it and how they interact and what the other countries perceive us to be in those areas. All right, Rick. Well, I appreciate having you on. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me with Jeff Overturf and Rick Moore. Kylan Ray Donahue. Let's give her a call and see what she's up to.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, how are you?
I think you're driving my listeners crazy tonight, and I like that about you.
I think I'm driving them crazy a little bit, too.
Well, that's what we're supposed to do, is entertain.
I told them, sir, that's $9.99 a minute.
Oh, yeah. Well, I may have to owe you on that one. I had to get back to you on that one. But the other guys, y'all going to have to pay up now, because real talent like this doesn't come around every day, you know.
It's true. It's true.
Did you like that segment with Rick Moore and He Something Else?
I loved it. I love Rick. He is the best guy to work for, to shoot for. Like, he makes you feel so comfortable. You don't feel like some perv just standing there, a photographer, to take pictures of you. And you, in the modeling industry, get so many guys with a camera that want to tell you they're a photographer. And, like, you never get that vibe from him. He's such a great photographer. Like, I can't say enough good things about him. I love him.
No, he really is. Well, one of the things I want to do with you, Kylan, and I need somebody in your age range and your looks are outstanding to basically report on what's going on in Dallas. In other words, like, what club is good, what club is in, what club is out, what people are wearing, where are they going, what are they doing, and your whole take on everything. And for everybody's information, if y'all don't know this, Kaylin is the most beautiful bell bondsman on the planet. She works at Delta Bell.
You're giving my cover away.
No, she is. Oh, my God. Y'all need to go to her page at Kayla Ray Donahue and go look at this picture of this incredible Corvette with the logo for the Delta Bell Bondsman. And she works for Mark Monroe. He's a little brother, a friend of mine, Dallas Monroe. And Mark's got, that's a hell of a race car.
Hey, it's not a Corvette. Listen, that's a GT.
Oh, it
is. That sucker has $250,000 poured into it. I mean, it races. It's not just pretty. That thing can go.
Well, you know, that picture of you standing in front of it is awesome.
Well, thank you. I love it myself. You know where that picture was taken? It's a funny story because, you know, we're up there and I organized that whole photo shoot for the Delta Bell Bonds Bond Girls. And we're actually up there with, you know, real guns. You know, I've got my real weapon. I have my SIG on me. And I didn't tell Mark where we were doing the photo shoot. It was on Mother's Day. He was with his family. We had the car. I had Dallas bring it over there. I organized the models and everything. I didn't tell Mark at the time until after the pictures were done, because I said I want the background to be of downtown Dallas. And he said, well, where were you that you got that car on a rooftop? And I said, well, I had to find a parking garage that didn't have any bumps to go over because your car sits so low to the ground. And I said, the only thing I could find was the Dallas County precinct.
Well, hey, it fit the whole motif. It did. I mean, your outfit, the whole policeman badge, gun, handcuff, pepper spray thing.
we were up there with loaded guns on top of the Dallas County precinct, unbeknownst to anybody inside.
That's right. So watch out, James. You just picked up an instant fan. Well, anyway, next week's show, we're going to have Krista Frazier. She was Miss World Hawaii Tropics a few years ago. And I don't know if y'all have met or not. And me and Rick are hosting that one. And after I get done with the show tonight, I'm going to call you back, and we're going to start working out the details to get you on as a feature show. Then after that, a contributor 10-minute spot every week. Does that sound good?
Absolutely. I'd love to do that and tell people where to go and what not to do in Dallas.
Oh, absolutely.
Dallas has a lot of problems, and it's got a lot of good things. There's a lot of $30,000 millionaires out there. They're driving me nuts when I go to the club.
Yeah, but also, if they get in trouble, they know who to call to get them out of jail.
That's true, but if they jump bond, I don't want them to know to look for me either, because I'm really good bait for that, too. Don't blow my cover.
Absolutely. Okay,
that's how I catch the guys.
Oh, I see that. That's a smart – I'll have to congratulate Mark on that whole scheme. That's a good one. Okay, well, I'm going to get back to some music. Just hang tight and keep listening to the show, Kylie, and keep talking to my boys here on the group chat.
All right, I will.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, and we'll get right back to the music, okay?
All right, sweetheart.
Okay, bye.